Open count. Got things underway. Thank you. Operator, could you please start the recording and let us know when that has been done?
The recording is on, gentlemen and ladies.
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Singapore. Welcome to the GNSO Council meeting. We'll get things started straight away with a roll call, Glenn, if... sorry. Just give Glenn time to get settled in, and we'll start things off with the roll call.
There's too much echo. We can't hear you properly.
So just before we do that, apparently there's too much echo. I don't know if
I'm ready,
something can... People are finding it difficult to hear.
Carlos Aguirre, Tim Ruiz, Stefanie van Gelder.
Here.
Adrian Kindres.
Here.
Jeff Newman.
Here.
Jonathan Robinson.
Here.
Ching Chao.
Present.
Andrei Kolesnikov.
Here.
Jamie Wagner.
Here.
Zaid Jamil.
Here.
Wolf Ulrich Knoben.
Here.
John Brerard.
Here.
Christina Rosette.
Here.
David Taylor.
Here.
Deborah Hughes.
Here.
Wendy Salsa.
Here.
Rafik Damak.
Here.
Bill Drake.
Here.
Rosemary Sinclair.
Here.
And Olga Gavelli. Thank you. And Alan Greenberg. And we have apologies from Han Chuan Lee, who will join us later on during the meeting. Mary. Mary Wong?
Here for sure.
Have I missed anybody? And please note that we have full council attendance today. Thank you, Stefan.
Thank you very much, Glenn. So, do we have any updates to statements of interests? Not hearing any. Do we have any?
Sorry, Stefan. I've reviewed mine online, and it's not entirely current, but it's a matter of dates, and it's a tidy up. So I'll produce something. It's more administrative than that. The key point, I think, is I've no longer on the nominate board, but I'll update it online in short order.
Thank you, Jonathan. Apparently we're still getting some audio problems. I don't know if that can be fixed. Are there any requests to review or amend the agenda? Okay, hearing none. You will note that the minutes from our previous meeting were approved today. And we'll move into item two, which is our usual pending projects item. This time we are going to have a look at the UDRP work that is currently going on. And we have an update from Margie on this. Margie, if you can give us that update, please.
Sure. Let's figure this out. Okay. All right, here we go. I'll provide you a brief update of the preliminary issue report on the current state of the UDRP. I did go into some detail in the session on Saturday, and I won't go into as much detail, but just for those of you that were unable to attend or for the audience, I'll provide an overview of the main points. So essentially, the council requested an issue report on February 3rd, looking at the current state of the UDRP. This was in response to the request that came from the Registration Abuse Policy Working Group, sort of final report that suggested that there be an issue report on the issue of the current state of the UDRP and to really look at the inequalities and insufficiencies with the process and just to see how the problem of cyber squatting has been addressed under the UDRP. So we did a bit of research to come up with the preliminary issue report that has been published for public comment, starting with a webinar on May 10th, where we heard from a series of experts on their views on whether or not the UDRP should be evaluated or modified and whether the council should initiate a policy development process or a PDP on the UDRP. And that is open until, the public comment is open until July 15th. And we had a session this morning, which was fairly well attended, exploring some of the recommendations that staff made in the preliminary issue report. Following the closing of the public comment period, there will be a final issue report that will be released. So I anticipate it will be sometime in August. And then at that point, the council can decide whether it should proceed on a policy development process to review the UDRP. And briefly, listening to the experts, and even today in the session this morning, it seems as though the view of the UDRP is that it is a success. It's been in place for over 10 years and has really been tested in the sense that there's been 30,000 complaints filed over the last decade, and the UDRP has served as a model for CCTLDs. It's looked upon as a viable alternative to litigation that takes place with respect to trademark infringement. It gives both parties an ability to resolve these issues in a fairly inexpensive manner. And over the last decade, the UDRP providers have devoted significant resources in educating and publishing decisions. So the policy itself and its implementation is really transparent and provides those interested in the process a really clear picture of what's required and whether you have an ability to prevail. So the preliminary issue report that we published summarizes some of these opinions that we heard in the webinar and also were also explained in today's session. We're going to take these public comments and the comments that were made in the session earlier today to develop the final issue report that will elaborate on some of these issues. But the opinion that's described in the preliminary issue report is that the UDRP is viewed as cost-effective. It's also viewed as flexible and fair to respondents and is predictable and transparent, and that's a good thing. I mean, the community feels that the way the implementation of the UDRP has been to date is really publicly available, and it provides a lot of predictability to those in the marketplace. There is the notion that the UDRP is unfair to brand holders, primarily because of the volume of cyber squatting, and so that's something that is an issue where brand holders have to spend a lot of money in protecting their brands, but it's not necessarily a criticism of the policy itself. And so the sentiment that we heard on the webinar and we also heard again this morning is that although the UDRP is not perfect, some believe that there's more harm than good that could result from a PDP. And there are some that express the viewpoint that if the UDRP is to be reviewed at all, it might make sense to focus on process improvements as opposed to updating the policy. And so I use the word consensus loosely here. It's not a GNSO council consensus or even a working group consensus. It reflects what was mentioned in the webinar, and I'll have to evaluate the opinions from this morning's presentations. But there is a sentiment that if a policy development process is initiated on the UDRP, it might undermine the effectiveness of the UDRP. Part of the issue report also includes the staff recommendation. That's part of what we do in an issue report is to provide counsel to the GNSO Council on what the staff view is of whether a policy development process should be initiated. We note in the preliminary issue report that it is certainly within scope of the GNSO Council to take a look at the policy and to review it. But we did feel that given the community view that we heard in the webinar and we also heard it again this morning that that we recommend against initiating a policy development process at this time. We do, though, feel that if it turns out that the council feels that there should be some sort of review of the UDRP, that we've suggested an alternative approach, primarily that that rather than going through the policy development process, we might consider convening a team of experts that really focus on process recommendations only and really see if we can improve the implementation of the policy through affecting changes to the process rather than the policy. And then after this expert team should come up with recommendations and vet those with the community and ultimately be implemented, you could always then consider doing a PDP if there's still a desire to review the policy. And so I have additional information for those that are interested, and again encourage everyone to participate in the public comment forum, which is open until July 15th. That's it.
Thanks very much, Margie. Any questions or comments? And let me remind everyone in the room at this stage, if you do have a question, please, this is an open meeting, so please feel free to come up to the microphone, identify yourself, and ask questions. Jeff.
Yeah, I'm going to just, we had a really good session this morning on the UDRP, and I'll just bring up a comment I raised that time, and that's kind of with the staff conclusion that I'm just going to try to find it here again, that basically see if I can read it here. The consensus is that a PDP could undermine the effectiveness of the UDRP, and I just take issue with a statement like that because I don't know how a PDP itself undermines the UDRP. I can understand how an outcome may undermine a UDRP, but to say that a policy development process itself could undermine the UDRP, I think is a bizarre kind of statement.
And you're referring to the slide itself. I think what we're really talking about is the potential uncertainty associated with changes that might arise from a PDP itself. So I think we're looking at more of the outcome versus the policy itself.
But I guess that's true of every single PDP that we do, where we're reviewing any existing policy that we have. I think that's always true. Anytime you start any PDP, it's going to be uncertain as to what the outcome is. So, I understand. And I totally understand and get the point that a lot of people are worried about the changes that may happen and the outcomes. And we certainly heard a lot of that this morning. I just, again, think to make a statement that saying a policy development process itself could undermine something that's the UDRP is kind of, it's an interesting statement. I don't see how that's possible.
I think the perspective is that you know, we're not talking about just a PDP that's from scratch on something that's new. It's a policy that's in effect. It's relied upon by many people in the industry, and so it's we look at it from a different perspective because if you do make a change, and it may be there may be unintended consequences that result from that change that even the working group may not adequately consider. I mean, what we're talking about here is a very a complicated process. It's a quasi-legal process. And when you open it up to a policy development process, you may get folks that participate that may not have the expertise necessary to really deal with some of these issues and some of these changes. And as a result, you might end up with consequences that might be unintended and might actually affect the effectiveness of the policy. So perhaps in the issue report, we may clarify that more so that we address that concern, because I can see that the report itself wasn't clear in that regard.
So, Jeff, I know we want to come back. Can I go to Jonathan first, then Robin, and then back to you?
It's a pretty brief comment, but one of the things that seems to have that I've heard a few times recently is in relation to this particular issue is whether or not it makes sense to review a long-standing policy almost as a matter of good practice, like one reviews many things in corporate governance or otherwise. So it's that sort of takes a step back from the particular issue here, and whether within the structure we work, whether we should have that as a matter of common and good practice that we review policies by a certain amount of elapsed time, regardless.
Thank you, Robin.
Thank you. Is this on?
Hello.
Thank you. My name is Robin Gross. I'm with the non-commercial users constituency, and I want to do something I rarely do, go out on a limb and agree entirely with what Jeff Newman just said on the PDP issue. And I also wanted to... I was a little bit confused hearing Margie's description of the session this morning and some of the other comments that have come in, because I was in the session this morning, and what I didn't hear was... The UDRP is a wild success. What I heard was lots of people talking about different ways that it could be improved and places where there were problems with it. And the question is really, how do we get there from here? So I think if we can maybe refocus this debate on what are improvements that could be made to the UDRP, and where are there places where we've seen some problems. We heard, for example, from Facebook this morning, had a whole bunch of descriptions about the problems that they've had. We heard from registrars about some of the conflict of interest problems. We've heard proposals for ways to fix some of these issues, things like creating a statute of limitations, creating an appeals process, removing the incentive for forum shopping. These kinds of things were discussed this morning. And so I think maybe if we refocus this debate on what are the issues, where are the problems, where can we make improvements, I think it would be a lot more constructive than simply do we want a PDP or don't we want a PDP. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have Wendy next.
Thanks. And what I heard in the session this morning was similarly an interest in investigating lots of issues with the UDRP, many of them procedural issues and places where the policy seemed to leave gaps that didn't square with the concerns I also heard about don't start a PDP, as though that were the mantra. I propose the N2PDP, the not quite a PDP, or a fact-gathering exercise that looks awfully like a PDP but doesn't have the name that makes us run away screaming, because I think that we can do productive work in investigating these problems, challenges, room for improvement in the UDRP without any intention of destabilizing the system as it functions quite well in many ways.
Thanks, Wendy. John, did you have a question? I saw your hand go up. John? No, John Barad. Is it Zahid?
Hi, I just wanted to say that, we're talking about revamping or looking at a process, a UDRP, around which a lot of the work in the DAG is based. The work that the IRT and the STI did was basically based upon the foundation of the UDRP, sort of saying, okay, this is where things stand, and we're going to build upon this. Now, the compromises everybody has to live with, if you're going to change that status quo with regard to the UDRP, we are changing the foundation around which most of the RPMs have actually been formed. Now, it's like, I'll just sort of use an example. It's like a sort of house of cards, and the right at the bottom is one of the cards, the UDRP, when we're talking about RPMs. Now, if you're going to tinker with that and sort of pick up that card and say, well, let me just see what's underneath this. Maybe I'll pull it, maybe I won't, but let me tinker with that. I think we're risking quite a bit. And if we are going to be, in any case, discussing the review of the UDRP and give or take what's been done with the URS and with the rest of the RPMs, then I guess what we need to do is look at all the right protection mechanisms, including the UDRP, together as one package to see that they all balance out. And if that's going to take place, I think that does sort of stall the new GTLD process and a final DAG from coming out. So maybe this is not the right time. Nobody's saying that there's not work that may not need to be done there, but maybe this is just not the right time.
Thanks, Zahid. I had John next, then Jeff, Mary, and could I ask everyone, all the councillors that aren't already logged into the Adobe to do so, and raise your hand there. It does make it easier to manage. Thank you. John.
Thanks, Stefan. Following on with the comments from Zahid, I will admit to not knowing every nuance, but just because staff might suggest that there's no basis for a PDP doesn't bar the council from moving, from considering a motion on a PDP, is there? Right? And at the same time, the research that has gone on at this point has not avoided the issues that confront the UDRP, but in fact, I think, has been quite aggressive in identifying almost every change that any participant might seek to have in the UDRP. So I think we've got a fairly well thought out list of things to attack. We have an approach to do it. And so I think perhaps that suggesting that a staff recommendation is somehow a bar to our action misunderstands the issue that's before us. I think more directly, rights protection mechanisms embedded in the new GTLDs have no performance track record, and perhaps we'd like to see what that performance is before we open up to inspection the only rights protection management system that we have right now. I realize that it's not a perfect solution, but it's one I think that works and can work in the near term for us. Thank you, Stefan.
Thank you, John. Jeff.
Yeah, I just want to remind the group here, the council, that you know, all of this came out of the RAP recommendations, and I believe it was a full consensus or unanimous consensus that decided that they wanted a UDRP, a PDP on the UDRP. And, you know, so we do like to adhere to precedent here. They adequately considered the issue as far as whether to do a PDP, and granted we didn't have an issue report at the time. Now we have an issue report. So I still think that, you know, we need to kind of stick to our precedent, and there were a lot of people that spent a lot of time on that report, and I don't think we should ignore the results of that report. It's not like we're coming into this without history. That said, if it's going to be in the final issue report that if the staff recommendation is going to stay the same, I'd like to see a concrete plan on how they believe that we can review the issues. We do have issues. Whether you call them procedural or otherwise, as a registry, I believe we have issues because I, as a registry, keep getting complaints about registrars not doing what they're supposed to do, and not all of it is a compliance issue. Some of it has to do with uncertainty as to what the language means. And frankly, I'd like to stop getting those. I'd rather have them dealt where they're supposed to be dealt. And either I'm getting them from complaints about registrars or I'm getting court orders to do something. So I do believe that this is an issue. And if we're not going to do it through a PDP, which I believe is really the only way to actually get or to force registrars or to force an entity to do something, then I'd like to see a plan, a concrete plan of how we're going to do that. And to say something like a panel of experts in this environment is pretty scary because that's almost a synonym for saying, let's exclude certain people from the conversation. And that's almost the feeling I get because even the way, Margie, you explained it, you're like, well, if we do this, then you're going to get certain people in there that, you know, may not be experienced in it. And so I hear that, but even the board governance committee, back when they were doing the structural improvements, you know, way back when, said, look, we should have working groups as our policy model. We should encourage participation from everyone. And we understand that you're going to get lots of viewpoints, some of which may be relevant, some of which may not. But that's why you have a strong chair and a strong vice chair to kind of weed out that kind of stuff.
So I think we need to not be afraid of the outcome, and we need to review a long-standing existing policy. And the last point, Margie, about you said, well, this is something that's already in place. If we followed that philosophy, then we would have never done a PDP on transfers, which was a long-standing policy that we had to review because we saw that there were some issues. And so it's very common for us to go back and review existing policies.
Thanks, Jeff. So I have Mary, Christina, Thomas, Carlos, and Avery. Mary.
Thanks, Stefan. Let me pick up on what John and Jeff have just said and make two points, at least I think it's two. So first, we are talking about an ongoing process that we don't yet have a final issue report on. As I said this morning, this is a new process for the GNSO, that there is first a preliminary report followed by public comments. And for this particular one, we've had the webinar and we had the panel session this morning, and the public comments period are still open. I could be getting all the chronology and everything wrong, but the important point here is that there is still stuff to be done, technical term, and then the vote has to come. And let's not prejudge what we think is going to happen or not happen. It is true that we've heard a lot of voices saying that a PDP is not necessary and a number of reasons why that is the case, and some of us might find some more convincing or less convincing than others. But then this goes to my second point. If we're talking about a process that hasn't quite come to vote before the council that's ongoing with public comment and participation, we have heard a lot of great suggestions, mechanisms, and ideas throughout the process, including from today's seminar. And so I would ask, and here I'm speaking personally as a councillor, that in terms of the feedback that anyone can provide through public comments or through participation, I think it will help the council reach the right decision when the time comes.
Thanks. Christina.
Sure. I really strongly agree with Mary. I think it's going to be very important that in the public comment process we see very specific directed comments as to, not only, for example, are there issues that aren't identified in that appendix as issues that might be taken up in a review. To the extent that the commenter has concerns about a PDP, what they are and why. And I should note that I think part of what has made this discussion more difficult than perhaps it needs to be is that we've been using PDP and review synonymously. And I think we need to stop doing that. I do, just to frankly take issue with Jeff's characterization of the RAP working group, the problem with relying wholeheartedly on those recommendations here is that you only had six members who attended more than half the meetings. You didn't have, for example, any of the expertise from respondent counsel like you've had on the panel discussion and on the webinar. And I personally found that to be extraordinarily valuable. You didn't have the academic viewpoint, which I also think is very important, or frankly also the providers, because they're on the front line. And to the extent that they are best able to compile the individual experiences that complainants and respondents have, I mean, they're an extraordinarily important source of information.
Thank you, Christina. Now, I know we're way over time on this already, but it's obviously an important subject to the GNSO and the community, so I'll let this run over. I'll continue to let this run over a little bit. I think we can make up time elsewhere in the agenda for today. Thomas.
Hello, my name is Thomas Rickert. I'm representing ECO, the Association of the German Internet Industry. First of all, I think that all policies ICANN has need to be reviewed from time to time, and one should never be afraid for procedural or other reasons to touch them if there are issues with them. Now, the issues with UDRP are known for many, many years now, but I would like to second very much what we heard from Zahid, that we now have other RPMs in place, and not only are these interlinked, but they have been specifically designed to address some of the weaknesses that have been identified with the UDRP. So I think it would be worthwhile looking at those and to see how much of the criticism is actually redundant.
Thank you, Thomas. Carlos.
Thank you, Stefan. I think all is perfectible and could be improved. What is the time? Time is now. Is appropriate. PDP or expert panel? I think at the end, the important is the revision. And if we can achieve the better UDRP or not, we can know only after the review. Thank you.
Thank you, Carlos. Avery.
Thank you. Avery Doria speaking as a member of the NCUC. Like Robin, first of all, I did not want to pass up a chance to say that I was completely in agreement with Jeff. Going further, I very much agree, and I'm sorry if that embarrasses you. I want to very much agree also with what with Jonathan, I think it was saying that reviewing our processes is indeed part of good governance and something we should be doing. I wanted to specifically, though, voice a concern about the issue that Zahid brought up, where there was sort of intimations that reviewing the UDRP at this point would threaten the new GTLD program and possibly cause delay in it. I think that certainly the new protection mechanisms were built upon the knowledge and experience of UDRP. I know in time, in places, they actually use some of the wording. I think that that's a fine thing. I think that the UDRP exists independently, both for existing TLDs and registrants and for the future. And I think to put any sort of fear, uncertainty, and doubt on the notion of new GTLDs because someone dares talk about threatening the UDRP with review is really an unfortunate thing. Thank you.
Thanks, Avery. And I wouldn't worry about embarrassing Jeff from what I heard of last night. He can take care of himself. Tim.
Thanks, Stephen. I think I'll pass. I was going to just make a couple of points that Christine did about the RAP working group report, and I just didn't want to give the mischaracterization that there was somehow full consensus within that working group. Thanks.
Zahid?
Thank you. First of all, I'd just like to say, responding to what Avery said, that I didn't threaten the new GTLD process. I simply stated what there was a consensus on in the STI report, which said that all the RPMs are a tapestry. That was in the IRT report as well. And if they're a tapestry, then basically all of them are interlinked, and I think the comment that was made before Avery right now from the floor says exactly the same thing, that they are interlinked, and if they are interlinked, and if you're going to review one part of it, we need to review everything. Nobody's threatening the new GTLDs, but what we are saying is if you're going to open one part of it, you cannot do that without opening everything else up. And I find it odd that after so many years, this is the opportune moment that everybody feels is the time where we want to open this up, especially when we're about to embark upon a process which has an 18-month period where we're going to see how the RPMs, which are other than UDRP, work themselves out. So I think timing is the real issue. No one's threatening the new GTLD process, and I wholeheartedly agree with the comment made earlier. We should do it, but if we were to do it, then we need to do it in balance with every other RPM that exists.
Thanks, Aid. I have Jonathan next. I would like to close off the queue here, so if anyone wants to speak, please identify yourself, and then we'll try and move on. Thank you. And please be nice to the waiter that's coming to the table. Jonathan.
Thank you, Stefan. It's a very brief point, and it's a follow-on from what Zahid says. And I think whenever we're thinking about this or proposing to comment, we should be thinking about the point of principle about whether or not this should be reviewed and the timing as two different issues as far as I can see. I'd like to separate out those two points, and to commingle them is perhaps confusing. So taking Zahid's point on timing, that's a separate issue as far as I can see.
Thank you. So if there are any further, no further questions. David.
Thanks, Stefan. Yeah, just wanted to follow up on that, because I do agree with Saeed and Jonathan, and timing is a key issue here, because if we're talking about a tapestry, which we've said a lot about with the RPMs for new GTLDs, I think the rug under that tapestry is the UDRP. I'm not sure whether it's the time to pull out the rug or even to really look at how many holes are in it at the specific point we're in, because it's the only tried and tested mechanism RPM, which is there for new GTLDs. So I think it's the wrong time.
Thanks, Jeff.
So just Margie, just a question. What did you say as far as the timing? Like when can the council expect the final report?
Public comment closes on the 15th. I assume we'll get a lot of public comment. I mean, just given the interest in the topic. So I'm thinking early August, you know, summarize it and early August. Does that seem okay?
Okay.
Hi. Claudia DeAngelo, a member of the IPC. I just wanted to clarify something that Jeff said earlier. Unless I'm misreading the Registration and Abuse Policies Working Group final report, I believe they just recommended that the council initiate an issues report, not an actual PDP. So just a minor point.
Thanks for that. Okay. Let's move on then to item 2.4, which is just an item that we've introduced recently to highlight the changes that we have. The GNSO Council runs a pending project list to track our projects and the work that we currently have going on. And we've introduced this item to help track those changes and show the most recent changes to that list. I notice it's not up on the screen, so I'll just run through them very quickly. We have three main categories of pending projects. GNSO activities, we have nine of those on the current list. We had eight last time, but the Policy Process Steering Committee, which is one of the two steering committees that was originally set up to handle the GNSO improvements, that was removed. And we have a group working on the WHOIS requirements and also one on the community working group, a drafting team handling that issue. Those were added to our list, so we now have nine items in that class of GNSO items. In the other activities category, we have seven items. We had nine in the previous list. The WHOIS has been moved from that part of the list to the previous one that I just mentioned. And we have also removed the item on constituency reconfirmations that has now moved elsewhere. On the working groups, the joint SOSE working groups that we have, we had seven in the previous list, and that has not changed, so we still have seven there. And we also have one item in the outstanding recommendations part of our list. So that's a quick overview there, just to highlight the progress that we are constantly trying to make on handling our workload and prioritizing it. Any questions on that? Seeing no hands up, I will move to item three, and we have a motion that we will be considering on the inter-registrar transfer policy, the part B, the second part of the work that's going on the IRTP, done by the IRTP working group. And before we move to consider a motion that is rather long and that we will consider today, I will ask Marika to give us an update on the work that's been going on here. So, Marika, please.
So, yeah, this is Marika, and I think this is maybe an item where we can catch up a bit, at least on the update, because we did cover this extensively over during our weekend discussions. So maybe just very quickly for those in the room. This policy development process deals with the inter-registrar transfer policy, which is a consensus policy that was adopted in 2004. And as part of that adoption, it was decided to continue as well with reviewing the policy to make sure that it was working as intended and to determine whether there was any need for clarification to the policy. So as part of that review, a long list of items was identified, which was then divided into five separate PDPs labeled A to E, and we're currently in the B part of that series. So that this PDP looked at a number of questions related to whether there should be a process or special provisions for the urgent return of a hijacked registration or inappropriate transfers or change of registrant. and also had two questions that dealt with registrar lock status. So the working group produced a number of reports, an initial report and a proposed final report, and through review of public comments received on both those reports, it has now come to a final report that it has submitted to the UNISO Council for its consideration, which contains 9 recommendations. And to just give you a snapshot of those recommendations, there are 4 recommendations that propose concrete changes or additions to the existing transfer policy. One is an addition of a requirement for registrars to provide a transfer emergency action contact, changes to the Section 3 of the IRTP, changes to denial reason number 6, and a proposal to delete a denial reason number 7. There are 2 recommendations in there that recommend requesting an issue report, one related to THICWIS, and a second one that relates to the change of control function and denial reasons number 8 and 9 of the IRTP. One recommendation relates to promotion of an ESSAC report that proposes measures to registrants to avoid hijacking. There's one recommendation to defer an issue, actually to the... if it's initiated a PDP on the UDRP. And there's one recommendation for staff to actually provide a proposal on standardization and clarification of who is status messages in relation to registrar lock status. So I think we already went into quite some detail over the weekend in the recommendation. What I just mentioned, because I think one of the major ones or the biggest changes, maybe the first one here on the screen, and just to maybe clarify what this actually means, because this recommendation requires registrars to provide a transfer emergency contact that is to be used for urgent communications only, specifically relating to transfers, so urgencies such as hijacking. The main objective of this recommendation is to establish contact between registrar. The requirement for registrars would be to respond within 4 hours. I think it's very important to note that the 4 hours means picking up the phone. It doesn't mean that the issue is resolved in 4 hours. It just means that contact is established so that the two parties, registrars, can work out the issues between themselves. Also, important to note that the contact can only be initiated by contracted parties. So it's to be used by registrars, registries, and ICANN. So it's not a mechanism that is accessible to registrants. I said I'll just flick through these as we already discussed them over the weekend. If there are any questions on that, I think we, you know, as we go through the motion, you'll get more details on that as well. And there's some more links here to the final report and the public comment review tool. So, if there are any questions still on the report and the recommendations?
Well, I suggest we move to reading and looking at the motion, and we'll take questions and comments once that has been done. Just to explain, we're going to do this in a slightly different way to the way we consider motions normally, because this motion has several resolve clauses and because some of them have different voting thresholds. We have opted to consider each resolve clause separately. Now, I did ask Tim Ruiz, who made the motion earlier on, if he was okay to read these resolve clauses, and Tim said that he probably was. The first one is pretty long, but Tim, if you can tackle that, and then we will move to discussion and a vote on that first resolve clause.
Sure. I would just like to make a brief statement before we begin. Marika explained some of the discussion that we had over the weekend. And the original motion that was, the draft motion that was posted has changed in a few places, and I want to explain those changes because there's been some questions about those. One you explained, and that is that we've decided to vote on the each recommendation separately because of the varying thresholds, voting thresholds. Two other changes were made that basically defer two of the recommendations. One is to initiate an issues report for the requirement of THICWIS for all incumbent registries, and the second is to consider the issue of requiring the locking upon notice of a UDRP if there is a review for UDRP. And I want to make clear that neither of these recommendations have been changed in any way, not one word of what the working group put into their report in regards to these recommendations has been changed. They have simply been deferred, as we have the practice of doing from time to time, from today to another time. The one on Thick Who is being deferred to July 21st, or I believe that's the date, to our meeting in July. The other one is being deferred so that we'll consider it at the same time that we consider the issues report that staff is currently has out for public comment and waiting to finalize. So no changes to those recommendations whatsoever, just a deferment that seems to fit better with the discussions that we've had over the weekend. Okay, so the first, I don't need to read the whereases. Okay, so the first recommendation is actually, I believe, in four parts. Correct, so it's resolve one. Missing the first line here somewhere. Okay, resolved A, the GNSO Council recommends to the ICANN Board of Directors, one, requiring registrars to provide a Transfer Emergency Action Contact, TEAC. To this end, the language of Section 4, Registrar Coordination, and Section 6, Registry Requirements of the Inter-Register Transfer Policy should be updated as follows. And then the explanation of how those sections should be changed follows, and I don't think I will read those. The second part of the recommendation is number two, modifying Section 3 of the IRTP to require that the registrar of record, losing registrar, be required to notify the registered name holder, registrant, of the transfer out. The registrar of record has access to the contact information for the registrant and could modify their systems to automatically send out the standardized form of losing registrar's confirmation FOA to the registrant. This is IRTP Part B, Recommendation Number 5. Part 3, modifying reason for denial number 6 as follows. Express objection to the transfer by the authorized transfer contact. Objection could take the form of specific request, either by paper or electronic means, by the authorized transfer contact to deny a particular transfer request, or a general objection to all transfer requests received by the registrar, either temporarily or indefinitely. In all cases, the objection must be provided with the express and informed consent of the authorized transfer contact on an opt-in basis and upon request by the authorized transfer contact. The registrar must remove the lock or provide a reasonably accessible method for the authorized transfer contact to remove the lock within 5 calendar days. And this is in regards to IRTP Part B, Recommendation Number 6. And then Part 4, deleting denial reason number 7 as a valid reason for denial under Section 3 of the IRTP, as it is technically not possible to initiate a transfer for a domain name that is locked and hence cannot be denied, making this denial reason obsolete. And this is Recommendation Number 9.
Thanks, Tim. That was quite a mouthful. Well done. So are there any questions or comments on this part of the motion? Wolf.
Thank you, Stefan. Just a question to one part which Tim was not reading, but what is explaining to something, and I would like to ask about that. It is about this. The whole stuff, I understand, is about the transfer of information and the communication between parties. And that's essential that it is implemented the right part, the right process, how to contact each other and to communicate. So you are going to establish a so-called TEAC, the Transfer Emergency Action Contact. And then there's written here in the goal of the TAC is to quickly establish a real-time conversation between registrars, and then in brackets, in a language that both parties can understand. Now, okay, that's I think the basic, that is a must, you know, that people should understand each other, or should at least the language understand. Whether they understand the content is a different thing. And but in the following, you refer that this TEAC is also going to be used by registries and by staff. So I wonder whether this language, which is going to be inserted, is not to be understood by staff and registries as well.
Thank you. Any further comments? It was a question, but are you expecting an answer from... You were asking a question of Tim?
To somebody who could answer.
Maybe just ask your question again, and we'll try and find someone who can answer it.
No, it's very specific. So it's relating to the language between registrars. They should understand each other. But the TAC in this process is also to be used by staff and registries. So my only question is whether this is covered, this part of the communication part is covered as well by this language which should be inserted here. That is my question.
Let me put your question to Marika, who is the staff support person for the group working on this.
Yeah, this is Marika. I think the working group didn't go in that much detail to consider specifically the language used between registries and IKE and staff, because I think the objective is to establish context between the registrars. I think where registries and IKE and staff might come into the picture is trying to resolve the issue, which is not actually part of, you know, the policy recommendation. So I think the idea is to use RADAR, which is a current system that is used for registrars where they have contact information, and I think they can get access to information that I can provide, to use it as a system where they can log the information of that transfer emergency contact and establish contact between each other. I think where you see the mention of IKE and staff and registries, I think that comes more into the picture when there is a discussion around resolution of the issue. But as I said, that's not part of this this requirement as such.
Is that okay, Wolf? Thanks. Wendy?
Thanks. I just want to express our thanks to the working group for, it sounds as though this took a lot of work from the community and is part of a long process and a long part of a process that will continue. So thank you for this work, and thank you for continuing to go through these sort of bits that may seem like procedural or technical detail, but really are the core of what we're supposed to be doing here.
Thanks, Wendy. Chris, I believe you have a question.
Yes, thank you. Chris Chaplow, as a member of the working group, just a bit slow to get up here, but I think just endorse what Marika said, and it is about the registrars talking to each other quickly. And we looked at different wordings, and should we say English, no, and we went round. So I think it's as close as we can get it. Thanks.
Thanks. Chris, any further questions or comments on this resolve clause? Okay, seeing no one, is there any opposition to us doing a voice vote on this? Glenn, please do a voice vote.
I will, Stefan. All those in favour of the motion, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone against the motion? Please say nay. Is there anyone who would like to abstain from the motion? Stefan, the motion passes unanimously, and it is a supermajority.
Thank you. So that resolve clause passes. We'll move on to the next one, and I will turn back to Tim. Thank you.
All right, so this is resolved B. The GENESO Council recommends the promotion by ALAC and other ICANN structures of the measures outlined in the recent report of the Security and Stability Advisory Committee on a registrant's guide to protecting domain name registration accounts, SAC 044. In particular, the GNSO Council recommends that registrants consider the measures to protect domain registrars' accounts against compromise and misuse described in SAC 044, Section 5. These include practical measures that registrants can implement in-house, such as ways to protect account credentials and how to incorporate domain name registrations into employee or resource management programs typically found in medium and large businesses. It suggests ways that registrants can use renewal and change notifications from registrars as part of an early warning or alerting system for possible account compromise. The GNSO Council Chair will reach out to the ALAC and other ICANN structures to inform them of this recommendation and discuss how the GNSO may contribute to this promotion. This is recommendation number 2.
Thanks, Tim. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, is there any opposition to us doing a voice vote on this resolve clause? Glenn, please proceed.
Thank you, Stefan. All those in favour of the motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Is there anyone against the motion? The motion passes, Stefan, unanimously.
Thanks, Glenn. And Tim. Resolve C, please.
Okay, Resolve C. The GNSO Council acknowledges receipt of IRTP Part B Recommendation Number 7 and will consider this recommendation when it considers the final issues report on the current state of the UDRP.
Thanks, Tim. Any questions or comments? Any opposition to a voice vote? Ben?
All those in favour of the motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Is there anybody against the motion? And on this motion, there are abstentions allowed. Is there anybody abstaining? The motion passes unanimously, Stefan.
Thanks, Glenn, and back to Tim.
Resolve D. Prior to the consideration of approval of the recommendation, which states denial reason number 7 should be replaced by adding a new provision in a different section of the IRTP on when and how domains may be locked or unlocked, the GNSO Council requests ICANN staff to provide a proposal for such a new provision. Taking into account the IRTP Part B Working Group deliberations in relation to this issue, see Part B, see the report, Recommendation 9, Part 2. Upon review of the proposal, the GNSO Council will consider whether to approve the recommendation.
Thank you, Tim. Once again, any comments or questions? Any opposition to a voice vote?
Glenn?
All those in favour of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Is there anybody against the motion? And I think abstentions are allowed on this motion. Would anyone like to abstain? The motion passes unanimously, Stefan.
Thanks, Glenn. Tim?
Okay, Resolved E. Prior to the consideration of approval of the recommendation regarding the standardizing and clarifying who is status messages regarding registrar lock status, the GNSO Council requests ICANN staff to provide a proposal designed to ensure a technically feasible approach can be developed to meet this recommendation. Staff should take into account the IRTP Part B Working Group deliberations in relation to this issue. See the final report, recommendation number 8. The goal of these changes is to clarify why the lock has been applied and how it can be changed. Upon review of the proposed plan, the GNSO Council will consider whether to approve the recommendation.
Thanks, Tim. Any discussion? Any opposition to a voice vote? Glenn, back to you.
All those in favour of the motion, please say aye.
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 All those against the motion, please say nay. Are there any abstentions? The motion passes unanimously, Stefan.
Thank you, Glenn. Resolved F, please, Tim.
The GENESO Council will consider IRTP Part B Recommendation Number 3 concerning the request of an issue report on the requirement of thick whois for all incumbent GTLDs at its next meeting on 21st of July.
Thanks, Tim. Jeff?
Yeah, I just wanted to provide a comment on this one as to why we're deferring it. I know, Tim, you had said early when you were reading the first part that we've elected to defer a couple. I think this is one that at least our stakeholder group discussed in length about whether to do a PDP on or actually an issue report which starts the PDP process for thick whois. And, you know, we're discussing whether it's appropriate to do a PDP that's aimed at just one or two registry operators and really is not aimed at the general broader community. So that's something that we're considering, at least in the registry stakeholder group. So we're going to be debating that for the next few weeks. You know, and I don't know how we're going to come out on the 21st of July, but it's something that we're really taking seriously.
Thanks, Jeff. Any further comments? Adrian.
Given that I suggested this amendment, I thought that we, the registrars, wanted to make sure that there was a date in there so it wasn't seen as us just punting it into the future, you know, without seeking some resolve. I do share Jeff's sentiment that it may take us some time, but you know, at the moment, you know, that I don't want to say it's a placeholder, but there is a date in there, and you know, we'll see how we go. But I think it is a contentious issue for registrars as well, and there's much discussion around the impact, what an end result may be. So there's still some discussion to be had for registrars.
Thank you. Jonathan.
It's just a very small point that one of the points around impact is in the current context. That's to say with all the other work that's going on.
Important point. Thank you, Jonathan. Any further comments? Any opposition to a voice vote?
I just have a question, and that's for Jeff, and that is that to the extent the final position of the registry stakeholder group is that it's not appropriate to conduct a PDP that really is ultimately targeted at the policies of one or two GTLD registry operators, I think it would be extraordinarily helpful if simultaneously with that delivery of that position, the registry stakeholder group would set out kind of a plan for going forward on this particular recommendation in the sense of, you know, if they think it's not appropriate for a PDP, is there another alternative? And if so, what is it?
So to that point, Christina, I'm not sure if we're going to have a stakeholder group concrete plan on how to go forward. It's kind of an unusual discussion within the stakeholder group because we're really talking about one or two individual members, and for the stakeholder group as a whole to propose action that would affect one or two members of that stakeholder group may put us in a little bit of a difficult position. I completely understand your question. I'm just not sure we're going to be able to come up with that plan.
No, I understand that, and I guess it could be possible that this is a case where you have an entire stakeholder group abstaining on a vote. I don't know. But what I want to avoid is a situation where the registry stakeholder group is, on the one hand, you can't and shouldn't do a PDP that really is directed at one or two contracted parties, and then simultaneously the relevant one or two contracted parties are taking the position that, you know, this is consensus policy and we're not going to change it unless we go that route. So I don't want to end up with that possible perception coming out in the ICANN community. So that's really what I'm kind of driving at.
Thanks. Anything further? John?
I just have a question of Jeff. Is the phrase one or two a political nicety or a real sense of ambiguity?
No, I think it's literal. There are really only, two registries and three TLDs that have not implemented ThickWhois. Everybody else has. And, of course, it's a requirement going forward for all new GTLDs. So it's not a nicety. It's a fact.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. Anything further? Any opposition to a voice vote? Glenn?
All those in favour of the motion, please say aye.
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 Is there anybody opposed to the motion? Please say no. Nay. Are there any abstentions? The motion passes unanimously.
Thanks, Glenn. And I'll ask Tim to move on to the last resolve clause, and this is one of those that has a different threshold.
So this is resolve G. The GNSO Council requests an issue report on IRTP Part C, which should include change of control function, including an investigation of how this function is currently achieved, if there are any applicable models in the country code namespace that can be used as a best practice for the GTLD space, and any associated security concerns. It should also include a review of locking procedures as described in reasons for denial number 8 and number 9, with an aim to balance legitimate transfer activity and security. This is the report recommendation number 4. Whether provisions on time-limiting FOAs should be limited to avoid fraudulent transfers out, or should be implemented, to avoid fraudulent transfers out. For example, if a gaining registrar sends and receives an FOA back from a transfer contact, but the name is locked, the registrar may hold the FOA pending adjustment to the domain name status, during which time the registrant or other registration information may have changed, and whether the process should be streamlined by a requirement that registries use IANA IDs for registrars rather than proprietary IDs.
Thanks, Tim. Any discussion? Christina?
This is really just an administrative, well, I think it would be helpful for me, and I apologize for not catching this earlier, but since I don't have the foggiest idea what an FOA is, given the multiple meanings that could have, I'm just wondering whether it would be possible to make just a teeny amendment to that motion so that in the first reference it would be spelled out.
Perhaps we can just add that to the text. I don't know that that needs an amendment. It means form of authorization. Can I ask staff to just add that to the text? Thank you. Afterwards. Any further comments? Any opposition to a voice vote? Glenn?
All those in favour of the motion, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone against the motion? The motion passes unanimously, Stefan.
Thanks very much, Glenn. So thank you all for bearing with us through this long motion. Jeff, I know you have a comment. I just want to say that not only have we given ourselves a lot of work through these various resolutions, but I did want to thank Michele Nailon, who's the chair of this group, the IRTP Part B group. I mean, the group and Michele have done an extraordinarily huge amount of work on this, and I just wanted to go on record as thanking them and thanking Michele for that work. So I have Jeff and then Zahid.
Yeah, so I echo your congratulations. I think it's not too often that we actually propose a consensus policy to the board, which is the next step, which brings up my comment. The PDP final report, the PDP work team final report is now out for comment, so it's not binding or in progress, but I would like to make the request of ICANN staff to follow some of those recommendations, so when they're drafting their final report that goes to the board, if that would be something that the council, or more importantly, the actual working group could see, so they can bless that before your staff report goes to the board. In the interest of openness and transparency, if you could actually run it by that group, Again, that is a recommendation of that group, and I'd like to see, to the extent we can do it, that followed now. So that would be a good thing if that could happen.
Thanks, Jeff. Saeed?
Thank you. First of all, I'd just like to say that it is fantastic that, you know, we have got a consensus policy here and everybody has been supporting it, including us and the business constituency. However, I have been encouraged and urged by certain members of my constituency who were actually actively part of the working group here to make some sort of statement with regard to the challenges that are now faced with the new structure of the GNSO. The events or certain discussions online sort of underscored the importance of ensuring that in this new model, constituencies and stakeholder groups keep a very careful hawkeye, if necessary, on the work and developments in the drafting teams of the working groups so that we can avoid situations where policy managers may have to at times tinker or change certain decisions or take decisions contrary sometimes to what the working groups come up with, especially in this bottom-up policy development process, such as we've seen in the RAA and now the possibly, even though I'm glad to see that we've just deferred it, in this resolution. And if we don't, we run the risk of disincentivizing volunteers who spend hundreds of hours of their precious time working on these efforts. So I'm glad that in this resolution, at least, what we've done is at least just deferred some of the couple of motions there. And I just wanted to again say that it is fantastic to see that, you know, the hard work of the working group has come to fruition. But I'd just like to sort of again underscore the importance of us keeping a careful eye on the work team's work.
Thanks, Saeed. I don't want to say too much, but I mean, the message is very clear. In this instance, I actually fail to see why the message is necessary. I think, as Tim explained earlier, there has been no attempt by the council to change anything that has come up from the working group. It's just we're giving ourselves time to consider different things in different ways. But I know Jeff wants to speak to this, and I'll pass it back to you.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much said a lot of what I was going to say. In this instance, I don't think we've rewritten anything. I think you're right. If there is something that the GNSO Council disagrees with, probably it should go back to the working group, and we should not be substituting our own opinion for that of the working group that's put in a lot of extra time on these issues. And so I guess I agree with that sentiment, and I think in this case, I think we've done the right thing.
Thanks, Jeff. Saeed?
Thank you. As I said in closing and also in the beginning, that I'm glad to see that there was a deferral here because there was discussion of doing something otherwise. It's important that I point out that the working group, some of the members were feeling a little concerned about certain things that might have happened. So that is some of the concern. I wanted to allay some of those fears, and I think the council has done the right thing by deferring and not changing anything there. But it's important to just keep an eye on the fact that sometimes when things are being done at the working group level, by the time they get to the council, constituencies may have, you know, sometimes not realized what's happening there. And it's important to keep an eye on it, and just that was the statement I wanted to make. But I agree that the council has taken the right decision by not changing the bottom-up process and instead just saying, okay, we'll defer this. Thanks.
Thanks, Tim.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that what we've done today was to unanimously accept every consensus policy recommendation made by this working group. So I don't want us to that to be overshadowed, and the working group should be again applauded and thanked for their hard work and the way that they've proceeded, so that we have no question about the consensus that existed in these policies.
Thanks, Tim. Jonathan.
Yeah, and I hope this is the risk of over-egging this situation, but to me what this underlines is and emphasizes the importance of the working groups and sends a very clear message out that if you want to influence the policy, get involved in the working groups and do that, and we will take that very seriously.
Thank you. Any further comments? Thank you all. Let's move on to agenda item 4, and this is a small change to the proxy vote part of our operating procedures, and this has come from the Operations Steering Committee. And we have a motion.
that was made by me. So, no, I seconded it. So, Wolf, you made it. Do you want to read the motion?
Should we and then discuss a motion and put questions afterwards to Philip as chair of the
OSCE? Yeah, we start by reading the motion, then we discuss. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And the motion is, whereas the GNSO Council recently identified areas for improvement in the GNSO Council operating procedures that would simplify and clarify the procedures relating to proxy voting, whereas the GNSO Council tasks the Operations Steering Committee with completing a revision to improve the procedures relating to proxy voting, whereas the OSCE submitted to the GNSO Council on 14th June of 2011 recommended revisions, and there is inserted a link to the GNSO Council operating procedures to simplify and clarify the procedures relating to proxy voting. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the GNSO Council acknowledge receipt of the recommended revisions submitted by the OSCE and direct staff produce a redlined revision of the GNSO Council operating procedures incorporating the recommended revisions and to post this document for 21 days in the ICANN public comment forum. Resolved further that the GNSO Council shall take formal action on these recommendations, including potential modification, as soon as possible after the conclusion of the public comment period. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I see Philip is ready to give us an update on this, and that's a good introduction to our discussions and perhaps just a quick explanation for people in the audience who may not have been following this as closely as we have on why those changes were necessary. Philip.
Stefan, thank you. It's Philip Shepherd, Chair of the OSCE. Council has existing rules that came from the OSCE adopted by Council on proxy voting under two specific circumstances. One, very specific circumstances for absences, and two, more primarily on abstentions. Council fed back to us that there were two problems with that. One, in general, the rules were a little bit complicated. And secondly, that in certain constituencies, the wording of the rules actually went against their internal procedures. So they asked us to look at that, and we have produced a hopefully much simplified and easier to understand version of the rules, which we hope addresses those concerns. In brief, on absences, as you'll be aware, we already have a procedure for absentee voting under four specific criteria. That's for a PDP, approving a PDP, amendments to rules of procedure of the council itself, and for elections. And when none of those apply and somebody may be absent, then proxy voting can also come in. But more specifically, it was designed for abstentions because of the nature of the ICANN system of votes. Abstentions actually count as votes against. So in general, in order to allow votes to be as effective as possible, we want to facilitate as much as possible the ability to vote in a positive way. In particular, when abstention may be made simply for a conflict of interest, when there was no intent to actually wish to vote effectively no for that. So that's the reason for the procedures to exist. And we have much simplified it in terms of how the proxy giver gives a vote. It simply goes from proxy giver to proxy holder. It can go to anybody else on council. Now, if you want to give it to your own worst enemy, that's entirely up to you, but we don't think the rules are necessary to say who you should give it to. If you're a proxy holder, you can only hold proxy for one other member of council. So who gets in first if there are two matters. And then in terms of what the vote is, there are three very simple rules in terms of how that vote should be. And it may either be directed, if applicable, by the proxy giver's appointing organization. So the organization themselves has taken the decision, particularly helpful if there's a conflict of interest. In the absence of that, the proxy giver themselves can instruct the proxy holder how they want that vote to be cast on their behalf. And the absence of any instruction, the proxy holder may vote freely on conscience. And we felt that any other complication to the rule to try to second-guess various scenarios was probably not helpful to a set of rules. Most of them would result in most of them were effects of potential bad faith on behalf of councillors, and we felt that bad faith should be dealt with by the appointing organisations, not by a set of rules that we have set up for a specific objective here. Back to you.
Thanks, Philip, for that very clear explanation. Are there any comments or questions? Is there any opposition to a voice vote? Glenn?
All those in favour of the motion, please say aye.
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 Is anybody against the motion? Would anybody like to abstain from the motion? The motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Stefan.
Thanks very much, Glenn, and thanks to you all. We have a planned break now on the agenda. In the interest of time, we planned for 10 minutes. Can I cut this short down to 5 minutes, please? And ask you all to be back in 5 minutes' time and maybe enjoy some of Oz Registry's ice cream. Now, please make sure you all look at your screens.
School for